From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
There's just accounting shenanigans. And what we've learned here in recent days, and I'm here to get some more of the detail on, there's $760 million of I'm learning the lingo, supplemental appropriations about to be requested. And as I'm a business guy, I'm not a political guy. So what does that mean? What's a supplemental appropriation? That means they want to spend a lot more than budget. And what we've learned is these department heads were told to submit some low number in the budget. The budget doesn't really mean anything. Put in a low number. Spend how you want to spend. Don't worry about your budget. And then we'll deal with it after the election. Come on.
You know, it dawned on me that over the 21 years that I was privileged to be her close friend, she was my best friend, and we did an awful lot together. I learned a lot about her, and I feel like if she's up there now, it's going to take somebody a long time to get to know that, because, you know, I was still learning after 21.
It will be a wasteful day for Illinois taxpayers and for also members of the legislature. I just don't see why we need to change the law. And I think that, you know, knowing this is coming from the same party that, you know, wrote the legislative maps, gerrymandered maps 2 years ago, manipulated the boundaries on both the House and Senate and congressional districts, had this entitlement to all legislative and all constitutional offices.
That's House Republican Leader Jim Durkin. He's reacting to the call for a special legislative session in early January to set an election in 2016 for state comptroller. We also heard Nancy Kimmey, a longtime aide to the late comptroller Judy Bartzopinka, speaking at her memorial service this week. And in the beginning, Bruce Rauner, the Republican governor-elect, indicating surprise at the vernacular and the budgeting that's going on in Springfield. Those are among the things we'll talk about on State Week this week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Joining us is Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS and Illinois Public Radio, joins us from our Capitol Bureau, as does our guest, John O'Connor, State House Reporter for the Associated Press. John, welcome to the show this week.
Glad to be here.
Well, let's get first. A special session is coming in January, Amanda Vinicky, and this is to have an election in 2 years to elect a comptroller.
Exactly. So Governor Pat Quinn has issued a proclamation calling legislators back to Springfield that it'd be January 8th. The General Assembly wasn't really anticipating, or at least the House anyway, coming back before a new General Assembly was to be inaugurated. But this would forego that. Quinn says that it's a, you know, basically democracy he's appealing. What's interesting, however, is that he appears to have been flirting with trying to make an appointment for comptroller that would last longer than the remaining weeks of his term in office. We're not clear. He has not appointed anybody to fill the vacancy in the comptroller's office since the untimely and sudden passing of Judy Bartzopinka.
I should just quickly say, as we record this at midday on a Friday, no appointment has yet been announced.
Exactly. So lingering questions, because it seems as if the governor's office has, you know, held out this prospect of trying to make an appointment go into the term of Bruce Rauner, and then moved instead to calling for a special appointment. So we're really waiting for special election, pardon me. So we're really waiting for Quinn, and Republicans are calling shenanigans. They say that this is just a Democratic power grab. Judy Bartzopinka did win in November, but not by as much as she had been assumed. She was a very popular figure with voters and one of the only couple of Republicans to prevail statewide. In 2016 is when this special election would take place. Democrats seemed to think that they'd have the advantage. It's a presidential election year, especially if, you know, Hillary Clinton would be on the ballot, also popular in a blue state like Illinois, that it would be to their advantage to try and get somebody in there before the next election.
Now, what's at issue here is language in the Constitution. And as Charlie Wheeler and another expert pointed out to the Associated Press a week or so ago, accompanying statutory language that goes along with it. When there's a vacancy in one of these executive offices, the governor makes an appointment. And in the Constitution, it says, until a successor is elected and qualified. So that says to me, immediately, I'm thinking, well, there's no election between now and January 12th, which is Inauguration Day. So Quinn could make a case, as Amanda pointed out, to appoint someone through the next term of Judy Bartapinka in 2019. This kind of vacancy has never happened before, where someone is elected but not inaugurated before he or she dies. And Charlie, I have to hand it to him, pointed out that his interpretation was, and in the statutory language, it says, until the current term is ended. But it also says, and until a successor is elected and qualified. Now, Charlie could be Attorney General, because the Attorney General earlier this week came out. She's a Democrat, just like Pat Quinn, and said that that is indeed her interpretation, that there are two vacancies. There's a vacancy in the current term of Judy Bartapinka, which ends on January 12th. And at that point, a new term begins, and there is also a vacancy because no one's been qualified for that one.
And so that would gives, be Bruce Rauner's
that would
pick.
Gives, at that point, Bruce Rauner would have been inaugurated governor, and he can make the pick. But she also then made this, and it was, I don't know, maybe it's not unusual to people who have been around longer than I, but I thought it was somewhat surprising that she did go ahead. She was not asked this question. I don't believe she was asked this question, but she went ahead and said there should be a midterm election in 2016 because otherwise the voters will have been served by an unappointed controller for an entire four-year term.
She's a savvy politician. I mean, I feel like that was the move for her, and that's why this play. I mean, for Democratic Governor Pat Quinn, you see where Republicans are coming from, that this does very much look like Democrats trying to use the 2016 to their best advantage, get somebody in there, then that would be an incumbent for 2 years down the line. You see Republicans' frustration as well. This was Judy Bartapinka, a Republican. There's no language in the Constitution that says whoever is governor. I mean, let's say Quinn had won the governor's office, that he would have had to have appointed a Republican, as was Topinka, to that spot. But then you also very much, I think many people see where Quinn is coming from and say, hey, what's the problem with this special election? And, you know, Bruce Rauner, you were supposed to be the anti-politician politician. And what is the problem with going forward and having an election, letting democracy do its work, and you appoint somebody, they, you know, get the post for a couple of years, maybe they run for office and win, but take your chances, leave it to the people.
Now, is the sense of any of you on the panel that this proposal to create an election in 2016 would have any problems getting passed?
It appears that there may be, because thus far House Speaker Michael Madigan has not given his support to it. So it is also going to be a time, you know, right before the new General Assembly ramps up, just after the holidays. It may be difficult for the General Assembly to gather in mass and get as many legislators as they need here. It does have backing of Senate President John Cullerton. So let's presume it had passed through the Senate, where there is a real supermajority of Democrats. But in the House, I mean, it could. There are enough Democrats to do so. But without the helping hand of Speaker Madigan, it may not get that extra push.
And the only remarks really that have come from the Madigan camp have been that this is an issue that the governor-elect and the current governor should work out. And that's kind of an odd way to resolve a constitutional situation, isn't it, Charlie? Notice I wouldn't go as far as calling it a crisis.
Well, I think it's just an example of the speaker holding his cards close to his vest and not wanting to tip his hand yet and just see how things play out. And it occurs to me that taking a longer view, this is one of the issues that the Constitutional Convention delegates thought was best left to the General Assembly. There are many, many places of the new Constitution where something will, the bare bones will be sketched out, and then there'll be the phrase, as provided by law. And that includes for this situation where there's a vacancy. And so what the delegates, in essence, were saying to the General Assembly, you can require there to be an election if there's more than a certain period of time left in a term. For example, for the case of state senators, if a state senator elected to a four-year term were to die, a week after being inaugurated, there would be a special election to fill that term at the next general election. That's provided in the Constitution. They didn't make a similar provision for the executive article, and instead they left it up to the General Assembly. So it's totally within the power of the General Assembly to go ahead and do this. And I guess looking back in retrospect, maybe this is one of the areas that should have been covered when the new Constitution was implemented and when there were literally hundreds of pieces of legislation to flesh out some of those provisions. This was one that got overlooked.
It would seem to me to behoove the Democrats to support an election in 2016, considering that it looks as though Bruce Rauner, the Republican, will be able to appoint someone to controller. This gives the Democrats a chance sooner than they would have otherwise. That their next chance at winning that office would have been 2018. This would allow them to take it in 2016, which is a presidential election year, which is also a higher turnout year in what is a Democratic-leaning state.
And I would add, too, and this is going to sound like sarcasm because it is, we all know the comptroller is such a tremendously powerful position with these tens of thousands of patronage workers and these billions of dollars of contracts to hand out. I mean, it is
that doesn't stop the parties. That doesn't stop the parties from wanting to claim them.
Yeah, but I mean, give me a break. I mean, this is like a nickel-dime type of battle.
Although, we'll get to say this will be the most expensive comptroller's race ever. Or not.
No, and as a matter of fact, the role of the comptroller is basically to write the checks. And over the years, the people who have been successful as comptrollers have had professionals who do the day-to-day grunt work of making sure that the computers spit out the checks, sounding warnings when the state's finances are in trouble because there's not the money there. The bills come in and the bank account is empty. There was one occasion when Comptroller Dawn Clark Netsch, this was years ago, said her technical people were very surprised because suddenly the check-writing computer shut down in the middle of the night. The comptroller writes this stuff overnight. And they couldn't figure out what was the matter. And it finally dawned on them that the next check would have been in the red, and so the computer is programmed that when the bank account gets to zero or close to it, it stops writing checks. And that's what the state's financial situation was on that particular evening.
So you suggest we make a robot?
No, I'm just saying that this is not some heavy-duty policy-setting position.
Yeah, but it's a political position, and it may be a nickel-dime argument, but you can't tell me that the parties aren't going to want to grab every possible position they want. They can.
Oh, no, you're totally right. I just think it's unseemly, particularly so soon after the passing of someone who was truly an outstanding public servant, who had professionals running that operation very, very well. I just don't like the tenor of the political activities, I guess.
You're listening to State Week in Review. Just ahead, we talk about Bruce Rauner's latest comments on the state budget that he will inherit.
Support for State Week in Review comes from Illinois Issues Magazine, a public affairs magazine deciphering Springfield legislation and the state of the state. Illinois Issues and its companion publication, The Roster of State Government Officials, is available at illinoisissues.uis.edu.
Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Venicky, and John O'Connor of the Associated Press. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Well, this past week, Bruce Browner appeared in Springfield and talked to a public event, or a semi-public event anyway, and we played audio at the beginning of the show, if you were listening at that time. He sounded surprised that different state agencies might be asking for over $750 million in additional spending authority for the current fiscal year, and he acted like he was confused by some of the terminology those politicians used in Springfield. Lapse period spending, I believe, was one of them, or supplemental appropriation, one of the two.
Supplemental appropriations.
Yes, that's right. Not just, and the pronunciation of it seemed to be difficult as well.
Well, Bill, you know, you listen to that, and you have to, on one hand, agree with Rauner. I think even most Democrats would admit, maybe not on the record, but the budget that they passed did have a lot of gimmicks, tricks. It was pretty much a sham. That's what, you know, Governor Pat Quinn himself has pretty much said. So he's right. You know, you look at that, and there are a whole lot of gimmicks. And for somebody that's looking at the outside and says, well, lo and behold, why is Illinois' budget a mess? Here's proof, or a really good example of it. There you go. That said, this is a guy who's run for governor. You should probably, at this point, know terms like supplemental appropriation. You got to hope that that is a term that Rauner just was, you know, trying to use as part of his speech and, you know, sounding hokey and likable or something. I don't know. You got to hope he would have a clue, because everybody has known that this was coming. That budget that was passed at the end of May left a whole lot of pain to be decided later on down the line. We're going to see that begin to come to fruition, in part because of the rollback of the tax increase that takes place January 1st. But it's also, I mean, they just didn't appropriate enough money in the first place and kind of had this, again, budget that was purposefully meant to be temporary and shoved off until after the election.
Yet he did not say...
He shouldn't be surprised.
He did not come out and say that I'm not going to support any of this increased spending, did
he? No, and it was no secret. I mean, everybody wrote about it at the time. Republican legislators got up on the floor of the House and the Senate and derided the plan that the Democrats were pushing through. Even the Democrats themselves admitted, yeah, we're not appropriating enough money to cover all the expenses. We're going to have to come back in the spring. So I don't know if the governor-elect was trying to be coy when he's making those comments, or if he was just – and I hope that's what it is, because as I've said before, it worries me – if he is really as clueless as he portrays himself to be. I hope it's his shtick, and I hope that once he's inaugurated, he'll show that, yeah, in fact, I do know what I'm doing. Because the idea of supplemental appropriations, this is nothing new. I haven't checked, but I would guess if he went back to every budget for the last 40 years, the vast majority of them would have included, at the time the governor makes his budget presentation, a request for supplemental appropriations. It happens all the time. It's nothing brand new.
What may be new, or maybe not new, I'm sure it's happened at some point before, is really the situation. How much was put off until after the election? How much politics always plays a role in budgeting? But this is a really clear example of that. And as you noted, Bill, Rauner did not answer questions about what he's going to do about it. So he expressed his chagrin at the $760 million that agencies are asking for and kind of the ludicrousness of how that has played out. And yet he did not say whether or not he would do it. Again, you're listening to a guy who's promised greater investments in education, talks about compassion, and yet cuts looming for, you know, child care. Just came out with a study that a bunch of children, you know, thousands of children will be losing child care because some $300 million or so gone from that program will beginning the start of 2015.
Although it doesn't appear to me that he has really played ignorant on these budget issues, other than to say it's worse than I thought. But every time he comes to Springfield, in preparation for the job. He does seem to keep pointing out the budget's worse than I thought, and that seems to be the real theme, I think, of what he's perhaps trying to point out.
Well, a cynic might say that's, you know, he's lowering expectations. He said he could balance the budget and make education a priority and roll back the income tax at a time when the Democrats are saying we need to continue the income tax or you're going to blow a $4 million hole in education spending and a $4 billion hole in education and $2 billion for this current budget year. So this allows him to come in and say, this is a lot worse than I thought it was, and maybe we're going to have to be more creative in finding new revenues.
Now, John O'Connor, I want to move to another topic. You were covering a court case in which a jury convicted on conspiracy with a couple of people in regards to using Department of Public Health grant money that was designed to promote AIDS and cancer awareness, and they ended up for personal use. Tell us a little bit about this trial and certainly a misuse of state funds.
This involved a overall scheme of, prosecutors say it involved $11 million in Department of Public Health grant money going out to, on a no-bid basis for the most part, for helping minority and other underserved communities with campaigns about AIDS awareness, emergency preparedness, prostate, cervical, breast cancer awareness. And on trial this week, or for the past 8 weeks, was a prominent businessman named Leon Dingle and his wife Karen. Leon Dingle is a well-known businessman in Chicago, was one of the early investors in cable television, of all things, and helped bring cable television to Chicago. He got involved with, he was a chairman of the Medical Commission District in Chicago in the middle of the last decade and got involved with the Department of Public Health. They, over a period of about 6 or 7 years, got $11 million in grants, and what the federal jury found this week was that the Dingles essentially stole $3.4 million of that. And with their bookkeeper, who pleaded guilty earlier, who admitted stealing $1 million, it turns out, as I wrote the story about the verdict, I figured it out, you know, did my little calculation here and determined that what they took was $2 of every $5 that was given to them in grant funds. They said that their defense was, we worked like the dog to help a lot of people. We earned this money, and whatever wasn't ours was the bookkeeper's fault. She hid it from us. She did all the work, and she faked a lot of entries. The jury wasn't buying that. The government had 8 weeks of evidence showing that they had transferred a lot of funds from here and there and used the money on luxury cars and upkeep of vacation homes and yacht club memberships and so forth. This is a one of now 14 that the Central District of Illinois has convicted the U.S. attorney in the Central District for grant fraud. One of the attorneys said to me, we used to focus on contracts. Contracting was the big scheme. And now it's grants. And each of these 14, including Representative Connie, former Representative Connie Howard, Regina Evans, the former police chief of Country Club Hills, Jerry Wright, the daughter of President Obama's former pastor, have all been convicted, pleaded guilty, or convicted by a jury of grant fraud.
And Illinois did pass legislation during the last session that is supposed to help clean up and keep a better accounting of grants. And it's one of those things where you look at state government, and this is where, you know, again, maybe Browner has a point. How can it possibly be this bad? You know it's bad, but the more you hear, you're shocked. I thought I knew how bad it was, and it just gets worse and worse. And then there's also, you know, you got to continue to follow and look at when the General Assembly does take action to try to prevent this from happening in the future. Do they sometimes go too far? You know, you think at contracting and all of the what Illinois has put in place to try and prevent contracts from going out as political favors. And then it can be very difficult to, you know, get a contract when you really need one. We've heard universities in particular, you know, work for the University of Illinois and problems that they've had and trying to just, you know, buy something when they need it because you have to get a couple of extra vendors. And there's so much that plays into this beyond just one criminal trial and shady actors.
Want to take time now to get some notes from the field. I'll start with Charlie Wheeler.
Well, former Governor George Ryan was back in the news this week. He sent a letter to President Obama congratulating him on the move towards the more normal relations with the island Republic of Cuba. And listeners of this show will recall that George Ryan made a trip to Cuba back in 1999, and one of the people who went along with him was Bill Wheelhouse. And the Farm Bureau in Illinois had a study done, and they predict that normalizing trade relations with Cuba would result in a $7 million boost in Illinois exports, particularly corn and soybeans going to that nation.
And just one other note on that, Charlie, just in terms of population, opening up Cuba, if it's fully open, is like opening up a state the size of Illinois, roughly.
Yeah, it's roughly 11 million people in population.
John O'Connor.
I thought of a man who is popular or infamous in the mind of Charlie Wheeler twice in the last couple of months, last couple of weeks, and that is a man named Orville Hodge. He was the auditor of public accounts in 1956, a very popular vote getter, very important to the Republican ticket and the Governor William Stratton's reelection campaign that year. He was, I first thought of him when I researched vacancies with the Judy Bart Topinka death, because he left a vacancy when he resigned in July of 1956, shortly before. Pleading guilty to embezzling $1.5 million. And the way he did it was writing fake warrants for work that was never done to contractors and lawyers and other people who would do work with state government, and then pocketing the money himself.
Why the speaker is against merging the offices of comptroller and treasurer.
This is why that occurred. And the second time I thought of him was during the Dingell trial this week, because, as Amanda said, when we have these scandals, there are always laws that make this type of corruption tougher. But it occurred to me that there's always a way around it. 60 years later, the Dingells proved that this kind of thing is still going on.
And Amanda Venicky.
Well, Illinois senior U.S. Senator Dick Durbin has lived in a real-life, quote, alpha house, basically this fraternity where he's gotten to hang out and live when he's in our nation's capital with other Democratic legislators. So, for example, New York's Chuck Schumer and Representative George Miller from California. Not anymore. I'm not sure where Senator Durbin will find his new D.C. digs, but the house has been sold.
And also a side note there, Chuck Schumer is the great uncle of comedian Amy Schumer. That's all the time we have for this edition of State Week. Thanks to John O'Connor of the Associated Press. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org. Or if using a computer, you could search for State Week and Review on iTunes. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.